Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking, and if it is the third Tuesday from 2 to 3 of each month, it is Dr. Sharon Van Lentz. Dr. Sharon, this is the divorce show, but big announcement starting in January. We may reformat this a little bit, but welcome to
the
show.
Good to see you.
Nice seeing you. I saw you yesterday.
I saw you yesterday, and yes, I did the same thing with my microphone. Now it's in front of my face.
There it is, and a great show yesterday, too. You know, helping people, epidemic of teen suicide, very tragic, and we definitely want to help in that area to be able to gain more awareness, prevent some of these things from happening, because it's always a tragedy all the way around for so many people when you hear about that. And today is a key show.
Yes, it
well.
Is. I agree.
What's the topic today?
Depression during the holidays.
And that happens a lot, right?
It happens a lot, more than you would think.
Why is that? I mean, does it remind people of, like, what they don't have in their life, like big families or...
Bingo.
Is that really the case?
A lot of times I hear, especially teens complain, you know, even during the year, you know, Susie's family, they all get along. They have a big, happy family. They have these family dinners, and it's just, you know, and they compare their own, and maybe they have a single mom, and they don't get along, and they're always at odds. And so they compare themselves to other people. I mean, that can be all year long. But people that have especially dysfunctional families, and, of course, that's pretty much most of the people that I see, they are sad and blue a lot during the holidays because when they get together with extended family, they don't necessarily get along so well.
You know, it's interesting. I've known so many people that have a bad relationship with their partner, spouse, mm-hmm. whatever, and they say, well, I can't break up during the holiday for the kids or whatever, so I'll do it afterwards. Do you see that a lot?
Yeah, sure. I think that's a normal reaction. Yeah, like he'll take the news better after the first.
Yeah, it's like, wow, new year, new mate.
Yeah.
But it's particularly, you're saying, is December, perhaps. Is that more common?
I think there's more depression. I think there is a lot more depression during the holidays because people are getting together and, you know, with family and friends and they're getting together more than they do during the rest of the year. Mm. So what they don't have in their relationships, they're really realizing. And that's what makes them sad.
You know, could also part of it be they're sad because they have to go to their parents or somewhere and they just don't like their parents?
Well, that's,
and they feel obligated?
The teenagers are that way, for sure. But there are some adults that way, too, that, you know, maybe they don't like the spouse that their daughter married. And so they're just dreading going to the extended family's event, and they'll go, but they don't really want to. But, you know, they don't want to, like, disappoint their daughter. And so, yeah, they just buck up and go. And they, you know, they might have an okay time, but they'd rather be doing something else. And a lot of teenagers especially don't necessarily want to be hanging out, you know, with their families. They want to be with their friends. And so to them, it's just like, okay, can I get this over in an hour and then leave?
Eat and run. I've seen that.
Yes.
I usually run, then eat.
Run
that
and
didn't
eat.
Even make sense. But the thing is, you know, I'm thinking, though, as you're describing this, is there's got to be a trigger point. Yeah. And we're talking, I guess, trigger points. But not everyone that is in that situation will get depressed, though.
No, people.
So what's the difference then?
People from functional families don't get depressed. I mean, our mutual friend Mitch, I told him the topic, and he said, people get depressed during the holidays?
See, that's so interesting, isn't it?
He didn't have a clue. I think I told him he needed to
go to therapy to
get in the know. Get in the know. because, you know, he's just happy all the time, you know. And one of
he
these,
does seem that way, doesn't he? How
yeah,
does he
one
do
of
that?
These people, I don't know. I wish I knew. We'd put it in a pill and we'd all be rich.
That's right. We could bottle Mitch up, put him in a...
There you go.
In a medium-sized pill. Yeah, I think he usually does, so maybe not, though. But, you know, I think that's interesting, though. But even if you're in a dysfunctional family, but you learn how to be healthy and functional, mm-hmm. these triggers may not put you in a depression. You know how to cope. I mean, coping skills got to be really important, right?
Absolutely. And that's what we learn in therapy is coping skills, coping skills. And I would like to talk about that. But I think first I'd probably like to just...
Yeah.
Go over a few more points about the different types of depression because most people are not aware that there's different types of depression. And the first category is major depression, and a major depression is an episode where somebody has for at least 2 weeks crying spells, depressed mood, sadness. They may not feel like getting out of bed. They may feel guilty. They are having trouble making decisions, and it's a significant change from their normal functioning. And everybody in their life, most everybody, is going to have at least one major depression in their life. It might happen after a divorce or a relationship breakup is the most likely time period. And then there's something called dysthymia, which is a...
How do you spell that?
D-Y-S-T-H-Y-M-I-A. And that is where the person has it's a lesser depression. It's not as intense mood-wise, but they're still having the sadness and some trouble functioning. Well, they can function a lot better than someone with a major depression. And it's lasted for 2 years, so it's a really long-term depression.
Less intense, but long-term.
Right. So if a person is just, you know, not... you know, happy anymore, their affect is just kind of, you know, a little bit flat. I can usually tell someone with dysthymia when they first walk in, but sometimes it takes a little longer to determine it. But it's a longer term depression. And of course, medications are good for both of those things as well as therapy. And then there's bipolar disorder. And in a bipolar disorder, the person has had a manic episode of some type where they have been talking too fast or maybe went on buying sprees or did some harmful things with their finances, or maybe they're racing their car 120 miles an hour if they bought a Camaro, and they do some high-risk kinds of behaviors. They might even be involved in drugs, and a lot of bipolars are involved with drugs or alcohol because they're self-medicating. They don't realize that they have a clinical depression, and so they're using drugs or alcohol to medicate themselves. And sometimes they even, you know, do overdoses. And a bipolar person is 20 times more likely to kill themselves than your average person.
Wow.
So it's a serious diagnosis and does require medication. Then there's bipolar 2, and in bipolar 2, the person, it's called hypomanic. They're just slightly have an elevated mood. They, you know, they seem, you know, happy, and they're functional, and they can be functional without medication. But they also have some depressive episodes as well. But mostly with the hypomanic bipolar 2 type person, you would see more of the, you know, the mania side, the more like hyperactivity almost.
So when you say manic, what does that mean specifically?
Well, a manic person, I'm thinking of people I've heard of or seen over the years, might be found naked on the golf course. They're out playing golf in the nude. I mean, they've just totally kind of lost touch with reality, and they're doing something outrageous.
So it's really manic by its definition means something, like you mentioned, high risk. Something outrageous.
Outrageous.
So are you at the top of the pole? I mean,
you're at your, yeah, they feel really good.
Okay, so you're not in the bipolar, is you're one extreme or the other. So
right.
The other one extreme.
They're in a high.
So rather than a low.
Right.
Wow, really? So that's interesting. So So they're in a high.
And they don't want to take their medications usually, because what happens when they take the medication is the medication levels off their mood. So instead of going up and down, they are more in the middle. And they don't like being in the middle because they like the highs too much.
So what typically happens then is, so they get in a high, and then how long does that last? Does something trigger them to go to the low? Or what happens? It just wears off the high?
It usually, you know, depending on their cycle, it can be 2 weeks, and then they'll go to the other side. And
wow.
They'll go to the depression side.
And then they go back up again.
Or they might just level off for a while. Everybody has a different pattern. I mean, there's like, I don't know, a dozen or more types of bipolar disorder.
That's
really
so interesting.
Get into it, but that's beyond our scope here.
But do you know what triggers the swing?
It's biochemical. It's believed to be biochemical.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Which is why it can be, you know, treated, and the person can be, you know, functionally normal if they're on the right medication.
Can you do it without medication?
I wouldn't see a bipolar person. I mean, I've seen them without medication, but
yeah.
I honestly wouldn't want to treat them because of the high risk of suicide.
Oh, I got you.
Because they'll
go
into that.
Oh, you did say 20 times more. Yeah,
they'll go into that deep level of depression, and that's when, they're coming out of it, when they start to have more energy, they'll take their, you know, really, you know, depressing thoughts to a new level, and that's when they'll be likely to kill themselves.
Oh, that is just horrible.
Or now, make an attempt.
Do you see more and more people becoming bipolar as the years go on?
Well, it seems that way to me, but I don't know if that's just because they're finally seeking therapy. It seems to be like a higher percentage of my practice seems to be bipolar people.
And is that one of the more challenging?
Yeah, I'd say it's one of the more challenging. Yes, especially if there's two of them and they come in for marital counseling.
Oh, and they're both bipolar, you mean?
I've had that scenario too, and that's
wow.
Hard.
Yep. Oh, that would be so. If one was low and one was high, that's well that's got
to
be tough.
Like one would have to be taking care of the other one all the time.
Oh man, does that happen?
Yeah. That's
so they alternate
tough,
high and low?
That's a tough scenario.
It's like a dance, right?
Yeah, it's always a dance. Or even person that's not bipolar involved in a relationship with someone who is bipolar, they are in become almost merged with the bipolar dance, as you say, because the other person's going through the highs and lows and sort of takes the normal person along with them.
Oh,
so
wow.
That person, if they come in and say, you know, I'm having trouble with my boyfriend, you know, I feel like I'm on a roller coaster, then you almost know that they're involved with somebody that's bipolar, because that's exactly what it feels like. We
wow.
go up and then we go down and then we go up and then we go down. And it's driving them crazy.
Oh, I can imagine. You'd never know. It'd be unpredictable.
Right.
So how do, bipolar, is a greater... Now, you said it seems like there's an increase.
Seems that way to me. Maybe I'm just better at diagnosing it than most people, but it seems that way to me. I haven't read the statistics. I doubt that it's actually increasing, but I think with increasing awareness about mental illness, and maybe more people are coming to get help than used to get help.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That totally makes sense. Now, so we identified four types of depression. So the major depression, the... How do you say that second one?
Dysthymia.
Dysthymia.
Mm-hmm.
Bipolar disorder, bipolar 2, or hypomanic.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any others, or is that the main ones?
There are more that are, I think, less often seen. There's a seasonal depression, and this occurs the depression occurs at the same time each year. It usually starts in the fall or winter and ends in spring or early summer.
Oh.
And it's more than just having the winter blues or cabin fever, and they just have a mood shift, and it's the same every year.
Oh, that's interesting.
And sometimes that's caused by, they say, a lack of sunlight. So you can just buy, it wouldn't happen much in Arizona, but you can get a light box if you live in Seattle, which Seattle, by the way, has the highest suicide rate in the country.
Is that right?
And probably because they have the least amount of sunlight, I would think. But if you do live in Seattle, you could get a light box and use it for an hour or so a day, and that would treat the depression. And there's also psychotic depression, which I don't see very often, where the person has become so depressed that they actually lose touch with reality, and they might do some strange things, or they start hearing things that aren't there or seeing things that aren't there. And then you definitely need medication at that point.
That sounds serious.
Yeah, very serious.
Oh, my. So seasonal depression, that's interesting. Of course, what you said about Seattle, nice place out there. But when I did go out there, I was there for a week about 6 years ago. The sun never came out. Quite correct. I go, where's the sun here?
Yeah, I was real lucky to go. The last time I went, it was in December, I think. 4 out of the 5 days I was there were sunny, and just the last day did it rain. So I was really lucky last December.
But Phoenix, sunny Phoenix, big blue skies. Not today, though.
No, today it's pretty cool. And
but I still feel okay without the sunlight.
Yes, yes.
But that's the key. I think if you learn, and maybe there's some tips when we come back from a break that we can learn even ways to be functional.
Talk about the coping resources and things that can help besides therapy.
I think that would be really, really important. Let's take a quick break now. And when we come back, we'll talk more about what you can do. We identified depression, but what you can do about that, because really, truly, no one wants to be depressed. I mean, that's just not a way to live. And it's contagious. What you give out, you get back. And you don't want to give out depression. You want to be sort of a light to the world. That's what I'm thinking.
That's where we're going to go next. It's pretty small.
Absolutely. And we'll be right back.
At Beerham Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633. Or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerham Baum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And if it is the third Tuesday of each month from 2 to 3, it is Dr. Sharon Van Lentz. And we're talking today about depression during the holidays. It seems to be a reoccurring theme for a lot of people. And certainly our goal is we don't want people depressed in such a joyous or potentially joyous month. And it's just not December. We want people happy every month. Why not? Isn't that one of the goals?
Absolutely.
So we talked about the different types of depressions. And is there any, do you want to go into certain coping skills right now?
Yes, that'd be great. That would be great. Well, a lot of people, you know, do go to therapy, and that's a very good way of coping. And if you get a good therapist, they will help you identify your feelings and help you be able to discuss, you know, your concerns and feelings at more depth and at a greater level of intimacy than you probably discuss with anyone else. And a lot of times a therapist will recommend journaling for feelings, especially negative feelings or anger, and having doing some journaling will help you to relieve the feelings, especially like before you go to sleep, and may also help you. Let's say you need to have a talk with your husband that you don't want to have about money or the kids. Then if you write it out and kind of put your points down, that can help you get organized and make it easier to have a discussion with them.
So the process of journaling sort of leads to deeper levels of understanding. Would you describe it that way?
I would say so, and better insights and comfort with your thoughts and feelings, yes.
And how do you do that? Do you just sort of pick up a journal and let your hand start writing? I mean, is that one way people do it?
Basically,
and just words sort of come out, don't they?
Right.
Wow, let's try this live on the air. Nothing's coming out. Okay, but no, I agree with that. I think, you know, when I was younger, I played guitar. I was in some band, rock bands, and I wrote music. And I believe I was doing a form of journaling when I was writing songs.
Sure, absolutely.
It seemed to put me in a very relaxed state. And Tom, if you want to chime in, because you're a musician too, it seemed to do that for me. And it made me feel a lot better when I was writing songs. And maybe I didn't even understand during my teenage years. It helped.
Mm-hmm.
Is that weird?
I know. I believe that. I've written a few songs myself, and I think it is a journaling mode. You know, when you're playing your... I occasionally play folk harp, and I've played the piano in the past. And, when I've written songs, it puts you in like I don't know if it's an alpha mode, but it feels like that. And you just start hearing lyrics and writing them out, and that is a form of journaling, I think.
Yeah, especially the songs that came out were sort of dealing with issues of a teenager.
Right.
Maybe you know, rejection and
we could do a songwriter's workshop for teenagers. Wouldn't that be cool?
Oh, let's write that down. I think
okay.
So. Tommy, you're a musician. Do you write songs, first of all? Our great producer, Tommy Boy.
I've tried, but I do journal. I don't write music so much.
Good.
But,
good, a journaler.
I had a question, Dr. Sharon.
Sure.
When does it turn from a journal into a diary, into a to-do list or review what I've done list? Or kind of like what you're talking about, to get your thoughts together.
I don't know. When does it turn from one into another?
Or what's the difference? Maybe that's what I'm asking.
Well, I don't know that there is a difference between a journal and a diary. I mean, maybe there is in Webster's, but to me, they're pretty similar.
You know, what helped me
distinguish
was
them.
The digital age. Because I used to write things down on paper, kind of, you know, take notes so I could remember things. And nowadays with a computer or a word processor, for lack of a better term, it's kind of like as things happen or as things change, you can kind of, rearrange things.
Right.
To where at the end of the day, the beginning of the day, here's what I'd like to do. At the end of the day, here's how things actually turned out.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
You do that?
I do. So it really helps. I didn't start it on purpose.
He's organized.
But it's just...
That's very nice
organization. It helped with organization because I'm highly unorganized.
You're highly unorganized.
You are?
Without it.
No, you seem organized.
Wow.
Well, now I am. You didn't know me before.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, that's interesting.
So that helped you. So that's a tip maybe
very much.
Get on the computer. Get on your iPad.
Well, the whole journaling idea. When you said, how do you get started? Just put words to paper. It's kind of like, here's what I want to do today. And that turns into, here's how I feel today. Maybe that's the difference between a journal and a diary. I don't know.
Well, diaries can be feeling based, I think.
Yeah, I think they're both feeling based. I'm remembering a couple of adolescents I worked with 3 or 4 years ago that were in a highly conflicted relationship with their father. And when they came to therapy, I suggested they start journaling. And they started putting their journal, you know, on the computer, which was their idea, and they'd come in every week with, you know, this typewritten stuff, and they got really organized about it. And that was really helpful for them.
That is so cool. But, Tommy.
One more caution about the digital age. Be careful where you store your stuff, though, and who it,
someone could find it. Yeah, because thing that parents have to realize is that they really need to stay out of diaries.
Very important.
For their kids. I mean,
do parents do that? Do you have
I've had occasionally a parent reads a diary and finds out someone's smoking marijuana, and that's just over the top, because then, the trust is broken completely, and it's really hard to come back from there.
Yeah, but you're right.
So if you find a journal, don't read it.
How tempting is that for parents?
Too tempting.
Yeah, like, I wonder if I'm in there.
You know?
That reminds me, and at the we're still minutes away from a break, but Tommy, I'm at the break. I'm going to ask you to start the next segment with one of my favorite songs, and it's related to this. So I bet you'll be able to find it. I'll just give you the writer right now, David Gates and Bread. So you know what I'm talking about right now. So anyway, it'll be a surprise for Dr. Sharon now. So journaling, I agree with you. If you're a writer, I like your idea, songwriters forum for teens.
It's for teenagers.
You know, that'd be really cool, because it could be part of journal.
We could do that together.
Yeah, you want to do that? Because I play guitar. Maybe Tommy, you play drums, so I don't know how that would work. Would that work? Maybe. The bongos. Okay. But I think that's a great idea, because it can express creativity. It can get negative emotions out. Hey, I love that idea. Mm-hmm.
There'll be less suicides if we do that.
Yeah, because we definitely are concerned about that. We don't. Another thing, you just don't want to see people in such pain that they have to turn to that, because they have to be in, they're trying to get rid of the pain, I suspect.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have seen that.
Sure. I mean, I've seen suicidal adolescents, and it's hard to conceive of adolescents being that depressed over school, or the fact that they don't like their parents, or, you know, that their family doesn't get along, that they would actually think about taking their life. It's hard to believe, but I see it quite frequently.
Now, not to get far from our topic, but I am curious, how much is suicide ever an attention getter, or...
Yes. I mean, I think there's certain personality disorders where the people make suicide attempts just to gain attention. That would be like a borderline personality disorder where the identity hasn't really formed completely, and they feel pretty empty and bored inside, and so they have to create drama, you know, in order to kind of feel alive. So they often make suicide attempts, but they usually don't complete suicides. They just are looking for attention.
So if you're not giving a note, or you are, I mean, you do something that will certainly not just be an attempt, but you will actually do it, that's usually not attention getting.
Say that again?
So, you have people that attempt suicide, but maybe unconsciously or consciously know that I just want to go so far to get attention, so I don't want to complete suicide. Versus people that don't leave notes.
That make an attempt, and then they call somebody.
Oh.
That's pretty frequent.
That happens. Or they'll call someone and say, I will make an attempt.
Or I just did. Oh. I just did. And so they weren't really,
that
serious.
But the people that don't call, don't leave notes, that use methods that...
Or don't even tell their psychologist. They just do it.
Then that, the not attention getting, they're just in massive pain.
They're in massive pain and trying to get out.
Oh, man, that is just very sad when you see that. Not just especially with teens, but it's very sad because they have their whole life ahead of them. But adults, too. I mean, it doesn't matter what age.
Yeah, I had this one case a couple years ago. This was really devastating. It was an adult who never even told me she was depressed.
Oh.
And she ended up, you know, I think it was either November or December. It was around the holidays. She ended up, she had, was seeing me twice a week. I knew she was depressed. She never told me she was suicidal. Excuse me. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah.
And then one day, you know, she had always shown up like clockwork, and then one day she didn't show up to her appointment, and I had a really bad feeling, and I started calling her house. Well, about 2 weeks later, her husband called me back and said that, you know, she had killed herself.
Wow.
He had just come back from the funeral. And she'd gone into her garage and
put the car on
carbon monoxide. But the weird thing about it is she took her purse with her. I couldn't figure out why. If you're going to do that, why would you need your purse? It just didn't make sense
to me.
Could
it be by habit? People always bring in a purse?
I don't know. But, I mean, the toxicology reports came back, and, you know, she was on her medication and everything. And
wow.
Anyway, it was just a little weird. I couldn't quite figure out why she took her purse. But,
wow, that is very...
But she never told me she was suicidal.
Yeah.
And of course, I asked, and, you know... But anyway, so these things really do happen. That's why we're talking about, we want to talk now more about solutions and what you can do for depression.
Well, let's take a quick break and let's get right into solutions for depression. I think people want to know this, and whether you're driving or at home on your computer, listening to 1010 AM, either way, these are great tips, and you may know someone that may need these great tips. It may not be you. It might be... a parent, it could be children, aunt, uncle, friends, and take note, we'll be right back.
Hopefully, you'll never have to experience a disaster such as a fire or a flood striking your home or business. But if you do, know there's someone out there who can quickly help you get life back to normal. That someone is ServiceMaster by Disaster Professionals. Just call 602-431-2222, and our professionals will be there to lend a hand. You can be confident knowing ServiceMaster Clean has over 50 years of experience restoring damaged homes and businesses after frightening events such as fires, floods, vandalisms, and other disasters. We can offer services such as emergency cleaning, smoke, soot, and odor removal, in addition to water and fire damage repair. Our solid reputation is the reason insurance companies nationwide know ServiceMaster Clean will get the job done quickly and professionally. Plus, we guarantee to do the work right the first time, or we'll do it over with no questions asked. That's ServiceMaster Clean. We're the company that's first to respond to your call, first to arrive on the scene, and first to guarantee relief. Because delays and hassles are the last thing you need. Remember, 602-431-2222 for ServiceMaster Clean by Disaster Professionals. And get the clean you expect and the service you deserve.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hirschberger Assisted Living Home for the Elderly, whether it's a need to recuperate after surgery or just need daily assistance to enrich their life, you can trust that your loved one is being well cared for. Our caregivers are fully licensed by the Arizona Department of Health. An experienced team of professionals provide expert medical care, including physical, occupational, and recreational therapy. wound care, medication management, nutritional support, and personal care. All faiths are welcome. Hershberger Assisted Living Home, founded in 1997, will provide your loved ones a quality of life with loving care. Call Shirley Hershberger today at 602-314-6937. That's 602-314-6937, or visit the website ahomewithshirley.com. Hershberger Assisted Living, home is where the heart is.
I found her diary underneath the tree.
Very good.
And started reading about me. The words she'd written took me by surprise. You'd never read them in her eyes. They said that she had found the love she'd waited.
And welcome back again. One of my favorite songs, Dr. Sharon, Diary, David Gates and Bread. And that was significant. We were talking about that earlier where he was reading her diary. And you said, what? Don't read. And the surprise was, Tommy, you know what the surprise was. And do you know that song, Dr. Sharon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, of course, the surprise was that he thought that she was writing about him as the love of her life, but it was actually someone else. That was a shocker to the poor guy.
That was a shocker. He shouldn't have read the diary.
Yeah, and that shocked him. And that was a great song.
Yeah, that was very good, Tommy. I like that.
Yeah. How did you think to play that? Oh, wait, I told them to.
Oh,
you did? Yeah.
I didn't hear you.
I'm pretty sneaky in here as a host.
I'm doing all these things.
I'm like a pilot. Doing this, doing that as we're on the air. Multitasking, saying one thing, having deep discussion with Dr. Sharon as I'm doing something, signaling Tom at the same time. Anyway, this is really important topic, of course, just for listeners just joining us right now. Depression, the type of depressions you went over. And, of course, depression during the holidays. People somewhat can relate to that. And we're here to lend a hand.
You know what I just thought of something really critical I got to mention, and that is alcohol.
Ooh.
Alcohol goes with the holidays big time for most people. And alcohol is actually depressant. Some people know that. Some people don't. And the more you drink, the more depressed you are likely to be.
Really?
So people don't realize that. You know, they may, you know, drink to go to sleep or just have a good time, but it is actually a depressant, so it tends to make you more depressed.
Wow.
So that's real important to mention. Of course, don't drink and drive during the holidays. Always have a designated driver.
Yeah.
So we do have the toughest DUI laws in the country.
Oh, we do?
We absolutely do.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Absolutely do. The toughest in the country.
Because of Sheriff Joe, you mean?
I'm talking about, you know, the blood alcohol levels and that sort of thing. Stricter here than it is in other states.
And, of course, we don't have to say it, but we'll repeat it. I mean, obviously, if you drink and drive, it's not only illegal, and that's not, that's obviously one reason you don't do it, but the reason it's illegal because you're going to hurt people.
You
can kill people, yourself, other innocent bystanders. You don't want to do that. I mean, why? Why would you want to do that? This is interesting. You said alcohol is a depressant. So if you're just never depressed, you're pretty happy, and you drink alcohol, does that make you depressed?
Well, it can. I mean, you can end up with a hangover the next day if you don't drink a lot, and you can feel kind of down the next day. It's not going to last, you know, permanently, but it's going to just be maybe for that day.
Wow. I don't drink.
Oh, good.
I don't like it.
Glad.
I don't like the taste of it.
Yeah.
I mean, like Kahlua and milk, right? I go, just give me the milk with chocolate in it.
There you go.
And that's chocolate milk, right? I don't know. I don't think people usually like the taste of alcohol. It's what they get from it.
Well,
right?
I'm sure some people do. It's an acquired taste.
Oh.
But I think, you know, I don't know why most people drink. I'm not much of a drinker myself.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no fun. Anyway, that's our commentary on drinking. Now, solutions for depression. What do we have there? What are some of the solutions?
Well, certainly, you know, therapy is, I think, really recommended. And if your therapist thinks you need a medication evaluation, then that's a secondary thing if you fell into one of the categories that I talked about earlier. But another thing that most people don't know is exercise is as effective in treating depression and anxiety as medication is. If it's done, like, you know, on a regular basis, like 3 or 4 times a week, a half an hour of walking or the treadmill or swimming or something like that, it's as effective. And people don't realize that. So it's really, of course, you know, I encourage all my clients to exercise, and some of them do and some of them don't. But the ones that do exercise are going to be less depressed. They're going to have a better outlook and have more energy just to complete their tasks of whatever it is they need to do.
Do you know why that is? Does it get
the blood
flowing? It
has to do with the blood flowing and the endorphins. I think it's primarily the endorphins, and it has a biochemical effect on the brain.
Wow. That's a fairly inexpensive way to save on medications.
There you go.
Wow, that's sort of cool.
Yeah, I saw something. I wish we could show a picture to our listeners. Maybe we can put it on the website. But there is a definite difference in the brain chemistry of someone that's really clinically depressed. And as I saw it on an MRI, it was an MRI or some kind of blood flow study, it showed, I mean, huge differences and just complete color change difference. The depressed person was all blue, and then the regular person had more of a yellow color in the whatever the study was. I think it was an MRI. But anyway, maybe we can put that on the website so people can actually look at it and see the difference, so that, you know, they won't tell other people when they're depressed, oh, just buck up and get over it. That happens a lot.
You mean people say that?
Yeah.
What's your reaction to that? I hear that a lot, and as a psychologist, you would, I'm going to guess you just don't say
that person needs education, bring them in, and I'll be glad to talk to them, you know, and if they need some more scientific, you know, background, we can give them that.
But that's interesting, because you hear that a lot in many areas of life, like, oh, just get over it and move on. Does that sound compassionate to you, or does that sound sort of hardcore,
very,
harsh?
Very harsh, very...
why do people say that? They just don't want to bother with it? Or
don't
have understanding?
I think they really don't have the understanding. They don't have the sensitivity, and they just don't think... They think that you're just being difficult, so... or trying to get attention. I know one client who ended up putting himself in the hospital for depression, and then her sister wouldn't even come visit her because she thought she was just doing it to get attention.
Oh, so punishing the poor
punishing thing. The person.
Oh, sounds like marriage. No, I'm kidding. That didn't make sense, but in some cases it does, like 50% of them. But the thing is... you're right. That's just that's someone that's probably really self-centered, because if you can get out of yourself and not think of you but think of the other person, like, hey, maybe the person really doesn't know how to get out of a depression or, you know, and they just can't help it, that would be a good way to be in the world. And that's why you're here.
Yeah, that's right. I'm here to help direct people in their quest for better health.
Oh, that's a quest for better health.
For better health. Write that down.
I am. Quest for...
I like that.
I do, too.
All right. The other thing I want to mention is you got to have relaxation time. I think it's really critical. You can't work until 10 o'clock and then expect to go to sleep, like some people I know. But, you know, you need to come... you know, like come home at like 7 and have 2 or 3 hours to unwind, and then maybe at 10 o'clock you'll go to sleep and then you'll sleep better. So that relaxation time is important, whether you read a book or you watch, you know, TV. If you've got some favorite shows, I come home and I watch The Voice when it's on. It's almost over now, but that's my favorite show. And I've got a few others, but you know, whatever it is you want to do, go home, go swimming, go home and do the treadmill, go home and walk the dog, you know, do something that, and some people relax. I have one girlfriend that goes home and cooks. You know, that some people find that relaxing. So whatever it is you like to do, go do it for two, three hours and relax.
But you need some time, you're saying.
Some time. Yeah, you can't work until 10 o'clock and then go home and sleep well. And you it won't happen.
This message is for somebody.
Somebody listening.
Yeah, right. that would make sense to me. That does make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know how I combat that? I get up really early. And I start like at 6 usually, and I feel good knocking out by like 11, like almost a whole day's work.
That's awesome.
That's sort of cool.
That's awesome.
But not everyone's a morning person, right?
Yeah, I'm not.
You're not a morning person?
No, I'm grumpy in the morning.
You're grumpy? Show me your best grump. Oh, that was a good one. For those who are watching on BreakRadioShow.com.
Put a picture of that on the website.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah, you're right. Everyone has their own ways of, you know, time cycles, I guess, right? I used to not be a morning person, though.
Yeah.
Now I'm a morning and a late person. Is that possible? Have two?
I used to be a morning person when I was in my 20s and everything. I don't know what happened. Everything changed.
Yeah, so you like to, like, sleep in, and it's, especially when it's cold like this, and
maybe
it's comfy.
Maybe get up at 7.
That's still pretty early.
No, not for most people. Most people are on their way to work by 7:30.
Really? Most people get up at, like, 6?
Yeah. Ooh. Mm-hmm. My sister gets up at 4:30. Are you listening, Lisa?
Oh, that's early.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm not that much of a morning person if I...
Well, I think that's still a morning person. If you can do work from 6 a.m. to 11, you're a morning person for sure.
That's funny. I thought you meant like when you slept in, it would be like 9 or 10, but you're saying 7.
Almost never.
Oh, that's still
even
pretty...
on the weekends, I get up by 7.
Oh, that's still
you
early.
You should always have the same routine. People know that. Good sleep hygiene. You should always go to bed at the same time and get up at the same time, and that's going to help you have a better sleep cycle and better, just in general, function better all week long. Don't sleep in on the weekends, and just go to bed and get up at the same time every day. That's going to help.
Oh, I had no idea. Same,
yes.
That's a great tip
sleep
right
hygiene.
There.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you are having trouble sleeping, like you have feel like you have too much stress on your mind, take a hot bath before you go to bed. Soak for half an hour. And, you know, put some lavender or some Epsom salts or something, some good smelling
aromatherapy
in there, and that should help a lot.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm writing it down. Aroma.
Yes. I like lavender myself.
So that's a good one, huh?
That's another, relaxation exercise. And, okay, for people, a lot of people get a lot of support from their church or whatever, or their temple, whatever way they worship. And there's a lot of social support in the church service or in the, what am I trying to say, the covering of the church, whether it's a singles group or maybe they have a women's group or they have a men's breakfast.
Or a singles group.
You know, retreats. Yeah, there's various single parents especially get a lot of support from the churches, and they often have nurseries, and so that they take care of your children while you go to one of the services.
See, that's a great idea.
That's a great, yeah.
So is that one of the solutions?
I think so. People that are depressed during the holidays should go find a church.
Like
and
a
go
church,
get,
temple, or whatever faith
some,
it is.
Get some friends, yeah.
And that's
make
a great
friends
idea.
And
they have social activities usually at these.
Absolutely.
Why don't we take our last break, and when we come back, we will continue with Dr. Sharon.
Okay.
And this... we're talking about depression during the holidays, tips and solutions. We'll be right back.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
At Beerenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And the third Tuesday of each month from 2 to 3, it's Dr. Sharon Van Lentz, great, great psychologist. We're talking about depression during the holidays and some tips and solutions to avoid that seasonal thing that could come around, depression during the holidays. Everyone wants to feel good. They want to give joy to others. And it's hard to give joy to others, Dr. Sharon, when you're not feeling joy.
That's true. That's very true.
So we got some other solutions you're talking about on ways to maybe lighten the load a little bit and feeling better.
Absolutely. One thing that you can do is to develop a hobby. Take some of the time that you sit around brooding in your room or feeling bad about yourself or someone else and develop a hobby. I like to karaoke, and someone else might want to play tennis or baseball or basketball or whatever, but just get out and do something that you don't normally do and that you can maybe do with someone else or develop a friend to do it with. Other things you can do when you're feeling down is talk to a trusted friend. Talk to someone, get a new perspective on whatever is bothering you, and you can also find a support group, other people that might be, for example, people that have just recently lost a spouse might find help in a support group for that. A lot of the hospitals you can call, and they have these kinds of support groups. Also, people need to know what their boundaries are. And especially when you're getting together over the holidays with family members, sometimes family members can be overbearing, place demands on you that are unacceptable demands, and you need to set your boundaries and be clear with what you're willing to do and not do. Don't make more commitments than you are able to achieve. And if you're having, like, the holiday dinner, maybe ask everybody to bring something so you don't have the whole burden on yourself. That can help lower your stress over the holidays. Or go to someone else's house. But don't take on more than you can achieve during this time, because just having too much to do can cause a lot of stress and depression. Be assertive when you need to be. Be assertive. Learn how to say yes when you want to say yes and no when you want to say no. Don't feel guilty when you say, no, I can't do such and such. I can't pick up Aunt Mary and Uncle John. You know, they need to find another ride to the Christmas dinner. So whatever it is, set your boundaries, be assertive, take care of yourself. You're number one. If you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of anybody else. So you need to treat yourself like a king or a queen.
Yeah.
And, you know, give yourself at least as much attention as you would give to somebody else.
Oh, I like that.
At least as much, yes.
You know, it's interesting what you said, be assertive. A lot of people that are not assertive, you know, they might say yes and they'll do this, but guess what happens? They may develop major resentment and it builds up. You probably have seen that many times where they don't want to say yes, but they're afraid to say no.
Right.
And then they get this resentment and all of a sudden it comes out in a massive way sometimes and people say, well, where'd that come from?
They get angry and they spit it out at somebody for the least comment.
Wow, that
does happen a lot. And that's from taking on more than you wanted to.
Yeah, so I like that one. Be assertive. And it doesn't mean anything except you're trying your boundaries and, mm-hmm. and you know, you don't have to. You look at your motivation, right? Why you say yes or no. I mean, I always think that's a good thing to check in with yourself. And are you saying yes because you're afraid to say no? That may not be a good idea. But if you say yes because you really want to help or you don't really want to, but yes might, you know, it's something, a good deed, that's not bad. But that seems to be the healthiest type people when they can be who they are.
Exactly. And there's a perfect example of that. My friend Mitch was over the weekend. I had several choices of things to do. One was I had committed to 3 weeks earlier. We were going to go to church progressive dinner that was at four different people's houses.
Oh, progressive dinner.
And I'd already committed to that. And then like 4 days before that, my sister calls me and said she's having a bunch of people for dinner and they're having the Rolling Stones concert. So here I was in a big dilemma.
Whoa.
They were both at the same time. And I asked him, well, you know, what should we do? What do you want to do? And he could tell that I was just trying to please everybody. You know, I was going to do half of this dinner and then go to my sister's house and do everything. And he just said, do what you want to do.
Way to go, Mitch.
So
he's a naturally born psychologist.
He's a natural born winner. So anyway, to help me make the decision, I went ahead and we did the church dinner.
Wow.
And we had a great time. But anyway, everybody has somebody they can talk to help get through some of those decisions, and sometimes you have multiple things to do in one night. And don't try to do all three of them. That's my advice. Just do one of them.
I agree.
Pet therapy. This is something I get a lot of satisfaction out of. I have this wonderful cat named Starlight. And so most people have a dog or something that they get a lot of enjoyment out of. And also we want to learn how to forgive other people.
Yeah.
And don't hold grudges, especially during the holidays. Lighten your burden and forgive other people. Mm. Don't hold grudges. Don't remember what they did last year or the year before that Uncle Joey insulted you or, you know, stepped on your toe. Who cares? You know, let it go.
I like that.
You'll be a lot happier. And if you need additional information.
Yes.
Then please contact me, Dr. Sharon Von Lentz, 602-334-3776, 602-334-3776, or you can send me an email to drsharonvonlentz.
And you can go to www.drsharonvonlentz.com to listen to all the great archive shows, and that could be a companion too, or at least information and a resource. That is excellent. Dr. Sharon, thank you.
Thank you.
As
we
always.
Had a lot of fun.
Absolutely. We'll see everyone tomorrow on the Sports
Merry
Show.
Merry Christmas.
Merry
happy
Christmas.
New Year.
Have a hoppy.
Until next year.
Happy
have a hoppy New Year.
A hoppy.
Hoppy, hoppy.
I've changed
New Year.
My nationality. Hoppy. I don't know what is that. Hoppy. All right. See you tomorrow.
Bye.